This is the VIP Lounge. Now with your host, 5'8" of defiance, Alex Greenfield, and representing the 305 international hustler extraordinaire, MVP.
Man, I gotta tell you, I'm pretty excited. You have never met my friend that joins us today, but you're familiar with him. You're quite familiar with him. Everybody's familiar with him. Probably know him as the Milan Miracle, Santino Marella. I know him as Anthony Corelli. Somebody turn up the AC. Gentlemen. Alex Greenfield, Anthony Corelli. Anthony Corelli, Alex Greenfield.
It's super nice to meet you, man. I know your work principally from WWE, and it's a super pleasure to meet you. I think the way you took that character and expanded his role and became this really interesting part of the entertainment in WWE was just fantastic. And I hear tell through the grapevine there are a lot of interesting stories that I should be delighted to sit at the learning tree and hear. And I'm super, super psyched. Our friend here has been getting me into jiu-jitsu, so I can't wait to hear. Talk to you about battle arts, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you, too. I'm looking forward to actually this conversation very much.
Well, first things first, man, I want to say it was my first overseas tour, if not my second. I know it was very early in my tenure as MVP, but I remember getting to the building and everybody was talking about how on Raw they did the angle where this Italian guy, this Italian guy in Italy comes out of the crowd and wins the Intercontinental title his first night. And then later that night, that poor guy drank like a gallon of fucking alcohol. And the next day I see this guy fucking looking half dead, laid out fucking stands. Dude, what the fuck, man? How much of that do you actually remember?
I remember all the night. It's funny because, you know, when you're having the most exciting night of your life, it's the adrenaline kind of can help you drink a little more than normal, I guess, because it's just that, it's adrenaline. The whole, obviously, the deal happened in the ring, and I was shitting my pants, can't believe it, this is awesome, wow, this just happened. And then, you know, I wanted to just kind of relax, and everyone's like, no, you got to go to the bar. And like, kind of giving me the Iggy, like, and you got to sit there and drink, like, you know, until you're dismissed kind of thing. So, yeah. But, you know, I debuted, I was 33 years old, so I wasn't a kid. So I ran to catering quickly, got some white rice. And I remember just a big bowl of white rice and wolfed it down until someone came and said, oh, here you are. They're looking for you at the bar, so you got to go. So I go there, I have a shot of Jack Daniels and, you know, kind of, you know, exit stage left quickly, hammer some more rice. And then it was John Cohen came to catering again. He goes, yo, man, you can't leave again. Like, you're going to get in trouble. You know, I'm thinking to myself, what are you talking about, trouble? I'm a grown-ass man. But
I'm a grown-ass man.
And then, so we went back there. And then I realized, you know, now everyone's here. Ricky Steamboat, Shawn Michaels, which, you know, I was told, because it's my first day, so I don't know shit. I was told that he hadn't come down to the bar for like 7 years or something. And he came down tonight and it was already like, people were like, you know, Cena was kind of like, for you? Like, I didn't talk to this man for, you know, a year and a half, even say hi, because I was so intimidated, and he's coming down to drink with you. So there, you know, but it's half kidding, obviously, right? But it's the truth.
Ribbing on the square.
Yeah, there was a lot of ribbing on the square when it came to drinking when I started out too. Jesus Christ.
So I just had to stand there, and you know, I worked in the club scene up in Toronto a little bit, and I partied before, you know, well before I ever got there. So it was not, I knew it wasn't going to be anything I haven't put myself through in the past.
So I just somebody turn up the AC.
Yeah, and I just stood there and endured. And the rice was a buffer, a cushion. It slowed it down, but it didn't prevent it. So I was able to hold on till pretty early in the morning. I think I reached around 7 till, yeah, timber into a plant. Next thing I know, there's a knock on my door and they're like, the bus is waiting for you. And I'm like, yeah, make it.
Dude, I remember you look like death warmed over, man. That next day you were worthless. And I know that feeling because, like you said, it's nothing that we haven't put ourselves through before. However, that particular day, to go from the absolute heights and elation of winning the Intercontinental Championship, being on that list of legendary names, and then the next day feeling like you are fucking inches from death with alcohol poisoning and all. Peaks and valleys, right?
Yeah, you know, I found a little couch in the back storage room or something. They let me crash. And every time, like, somebody would come and check on me and, let's say, wake me up or whatever, every hour that went by, I remember feeling exponentially better. Like, okay, I think I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. But the first few hours where you let me lay down, I'm probably going to puke. Just leave me alone. It'll go, you know, in time, this shall pass. Just kept repeating to myself.
And now, 10 years later, the hangover is finally ending.
Yeah.
The hangover is finally worn off a decade later. But you know what makes me, Alex, I don't know if you know this, but our good buddy AC is he's Canadian. His head moves up and down when he talks.
It's a boot time.
Yeah, it's a boot time. He's a big fan of Terrence and Patrick. And Terrence and Phillip. What the fuck, Terrence and Patrick? What they would?
Who the fuck is Patrick? Where did he?
Yeah, who the fuck is Patrick? Terrence and Phillip. He is I don't know about now with all the injuries he's amassed. But at one point, he was a world class judo player, as they say.
Yeah, my whole life was judo, man. I, at one point, if I had my judo gi rolled up and my belt wrapped around it and thrown over my shoulder, that's all I needed, like, to live. You know, I could go anywhere in the world and walk in and train. And man, judo was—I was blessed. You know, I wanted to take kung fu or whatever, ninjutsu. I didn't know. I just saw kung fu movies.
I wanted to be a ninja.
Totally.
Yeah, when all the kids were playing cops and robbers, I was walking along the top of the fence. You know, with some homemade nunchucks in the back.
Nice, totally.
But Canadian nunchucks, they're made out of old hockey sticks.
There's some YouTube video you need to do on that that'll be the funniest fucking thing in the world. 1 million hits.
they're good. That's hardwood.
That's something that I wanted to comment on because, you know, here's a guy who carved a niche for himself in the WWE as, without question, one of the most humorous and funny talents to ever pass through. One of the entertaining by far and away. And dude, you are a legit badass. Like you're a world class judo. Because no, that's not fun. And usually, and you know, the past WWE, they like to capitalize on those credentials, and they really like to, you know, emphasize that, hey, this guy was, you know, a national champion and et cetera, et cetera. But in your case, instead of being the tough guy judo killer, you branched out and, man, what, you had a fucking 10-year career being, without question, like one of the highlights ever. Like anytime you were on the TV, whatever scene, you stole it.
I did. You know, like, for example, there's always going to be a Divas match and there's always going to be a comedy spot. And for some reason, I mean, I wasn't going to tell anybody, but I'm looking at these guys in developmental. I'm like, there's a lot of big jacked up guys in your way. I go, like, why isn't anybody trying to dethrone me? I'm only one guy. You know what I mean? Like, why isn't anybody? Nope, I guess they're not funny. I remember Mike Hutter. Was coming up, and he was kind of a funny guy. And I go, oh, this guy's trying to be funny, eh?
Trying to
But I was surprised. Yeah, like you know, I swallowed the pride for the job, obviously. You know, I wanted to wrestle like fucking Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy Smith and Chris Benoit and Malenko. That's the way I wanted to come up, like that. And then after going to Japan, I wanted to come like just be like a pure shooter styles. And, yeah, well, whatever. It didn't work out that way, but I did it. it's so funny. Lately, when I look back on YouTube, I see videos. There's one today. It was a Glamorella video that someone made. It was like 9 million views. I'm like, what is this? And I look at it, and there's so much funny shit that I can't even remember. And
shit you forgot things, about, right? Like shit you've done so much.
Because 52 weeks a year, you know, I've been off the last year with my neck. So let's say solid, even if it was 8 years on the road, yeah, that's, you know, 400 episodes. That's a lot to remember.
Damn.
I know your background was in shooting. Did you have any background or interest in comedy before adopting the Santino character? Or was it just sort of... I guess, how did it come to pass? I mean, I know you've talked about it before, and I don't want you to have to reiterate stuff.
Yeah, no, it's like actually funny. Because it's funny because when I was Boris Koloff at OVW, he was comedic. Boris Koloff was comedic originally. You know, I did the saluting headbutt and all these kind of ridiculous things. And then Paul Heyman, when he made me Boris Alexiev, he made me, you know, a killer and very focused and no comedy whatsoever. And I was able to do that role as well. But then when Santino was first born, he was like a baby face and, you know, didn't ignite right away. So they kind of thought, let's try this guy as a heel. And if it doesn't work, you know, who knows?
You get that shoulder shrug, head tilt from Vince. If it doesn't work, shoulder shrug, head tilt. Like,
yeah.
God damn it, most of the things I pitched.
So anyway, as soon as I turned heel, I remember the first promo I did as a heel. I came back and I forget who it was. And they're like, Vince loved it. He was laughing. And I'm like, laughing. And I guess he thought, you know, growing up, I don't know, in the Northeast, that the Italian accent was hilarious. So it just really became funny. And like, obviously he liked it because the next week I was doing special guest commentary. The next week I was on a pre-tape and I was in the ring. And all of a sudden I was given the mic, you know, for a long time. But so it's funny. Everything comes full circle. I was kind of comedic and I had those two elements nailed down pretty good. That kind of shooter style, battle art style wrestling and the comedic style. So, you know, at least I was versatile a little bit.
I'll see. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about your time at OVW. Notoriously, famously, one of our one of Alex's favorite people and one of our MLW platform mates, Jim Cornette. You guys had an interesting experience. He wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of yours. Yeah. Or I don't know. I wasn't there, so maybe I'm saying that the wrong way, but didn't you have a physical altercation?
Yeah, this is one of those things that talk about, you know, having to swallow your pride for the sake of accomplishing your goals. I was there for like a month, and I was with my daughter, and we're in the audience. And the Boogeyman thing was debuted in OVW, and he is having a little wardrobe malfunction with his horns. It kept sliding down, so some people were laughing. So Cornette's already fucking losing it because, you know, this segment's not going according to plan. So he turns towards us, and my daughter was sitting in front of me. So I figured he saw me earlier maybe at the school and was going to scare the crap out of my daughter. So I kind of smirked. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's going to be awesome. She's going to remember this forever. Because he looked like how he did. It was pretty crazy. Anyway, what I didn't know was that he was supposed to exit the emergency exit behind us. So he's coming towards me, and I'm not moving out of the way. I'm supposed to, like...
That's the Boogeyman is coming towards you, right?
Yeah, he's coming towards the guardrail. And I guess everyone's expected to go like, and move out of the way. And he goes out the side door. But I'm sitting there with a smirk on my face because I'm thinking he's coming to scare my daughter. And that's it, yeah. Cornette snaps. That was it. And he goes, move. You have to run from this man. This man is a monster. So I get up and I go, oh, shit, okay. So we dive out of the way. He goes out the door. And then later, Goose Mahoney, he comes out here. And when I think back of the look on his face, I know he just didn't want to do this. But he had to call me. He was commanded to go get that guy and bring him back here. So he's like, Boris, were you wearing a black shirt? Were you leaning up against here or whatever, whatever? I guess he was going by the description that he gave him. And I said, yeah. He's like, can you come in the back for a second? And I was like, oh, man, they must have liked the way I sold it, you know? And so I go in the back. And he goes,
oh, that, what a bummer that you're going in on cloud nine. Like, yeah, I did this just right.
They recognize my acting ability. And I go back there, and he's in my face in 1 second going, you think this is a fucking joke? You think this is somebody gives me a slap. And, you know, he's a feeble man, so it wasn't a very – it was the disrespect aspect. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to tell this story properly for the first time. Because I've never told it properly, but since this is the MVP lounge, the VIP lounge.
Much obliged, partner.
So I just smoked a joint. shortly.
Oh, my goodness. No.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot imagine such a thing. He says he's packing a bowl.
Yeah, I've never said that. But, you know, like whatever, 45 minutes before, half hour before, because I was going to go watch the show. So I wanted to enjoy it. And so, you know, if you've ever been, you know, if you've ever smoked a joint, you've been high and something happens, a fender bender or, you know, a fight breaks out. You kind of have that moment where you're like, zing, okay, the high's gone, you know, buzzkill, whatever. So he slaps my face and I'm just like, zing, what the fuck is going on here?
It's that it's that delayed reaction where you're like, you're almost like separate from yourself, watching yourself like a movie. And you're just like, did this really just happen? What?
I'm like, and the thing that went through my head immediately is like, damn, I just bought my couch. And if I punch this guy, like, the reason I just bought my couch is because I finally set up my apartment. I needed a couch. It was the last thing that day. I just got this couch in my little apartment. And I looked around and go, there. It's complete. Start living here, you know, because I've just been there for like a month. And so anyway, this happens and I'm Canadian and I'm like, if I hit this guy, he's well known in the community. He's probably going to have me fucking whatever charged. Because, you know, he's the kind of guy that would do that. Right. And then I'm going to be kicked out of the fucking U.S. and there goes my dream. Like, this is like all going through my head in microseconds. So we literally had to suck it up. And, you know, obviously the word got out in the office and there were a lot of guys that didn't like him and they wanted him gone anyway. So they were kind of like, hey, man, if you this has to be reported, he can't get away with this stuff anymore. You know, this is the man you want to talk to. And they're giving me Johnny Ace's number and like, just let him know what happened. And so they're thinking, yeah, okay, good, this guy's going to get rid of Cornette for us. But me, like an idiot, I left a message. And I didn't say anything. I just said, hey, this is Anthony Corelli. I'm a student at OVW. Rip Rogers, when he heard I left a message, wanted to kill me. He goes, are you? Are you a stooge? And he goes, let me guess.
Are you a stooge?
He goes, you're a goddamn stooge. Is that what you want to be labeled as? And I'm like, I don't know. And he goes, let me guess. Some of the guys in the contract class told you to call him, right? And I'm like, well, I don't want to tell you that either. Now I'm going to be a stooge.
Yeah, then you're really a stooge.
Yeah, it's like, are you going to be a stooge? Stooge out all these guys. What are you, like a cop in the 50s? Fuck you.
but yeah, you know, the office called and Tommy Dreamer called and he's apologetic and Johnny Ace was actually in town the next week and took me aside and sat down and said, hey, you know, you're not going to get a freebie because of this. You still got to, you know, bust your ass and become good enough. And you'll have an unbiased, you know, tryout one day in the future. Like, you know, so I was like, all right, that's cool. He's being honest. Like, there's no freebies here. Like, he's unfortunate. And he was gone. They did something about it. And I didn't have to go back and see this guy again. I've actually never met him. I mean, that I don't consider that meeting somebody, but I never really met the guy. And you know, we have a lot of mutual friends that say good things about him. So I figure that's pretty, you know, I could have learned something from him. Obviously, he's Jim Cornette. He's been around forever, but that's the way he presented himself to me. So he can go fuck himself.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, I guess everybody has different experiences with different people. Some people will tell you, oh, you know, that fucking MVP is a fucking asshole. I hate that guy. and other people to tell you off.
Here. Oh, I mean, sorry. I'm muted right now, right?
No, you're not, man. And other people would say, hey, he's a great guy. And my experiences with Cornette have always been great, and yours haven't, and Alex has had some issues. And it's funny because for a little while, you know, there was a little back and forth. And we're on the same platform, MLW. So it was kind of interesting having like an intercompany
intramural,
intramural rivalry. But well, thank you for setting the record straight and giving your end of what happened. Now let's move on to some cool shit, man. Let's just let that fuck shit go. Let's talk about you and your fucking school up there in Mississauga, man. Mississauga.
Mississauga, like Mississippi.
Yeah, it's funny because I was talking to somebody from Canada who my cousins, the twins, they have a visitor here from Brampton.
Oh, yeah.
I made the mistake of saying Mississauga.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's Mississauga, damn it. I just made a mistake, man.
Sometimes you say Mississauguan.
Mississauguan.
Did you guys ever play Worcester in Massachusetts?
Worcester. Oh, Worcester. Yeah.
Worcester. Yeah, Worcester. You know, Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah,
it sounds delicious.
I'd love to have some. Dude, I actually had the pleasure of going to the Battle Arts Academy. What a fucking space you've got, dude. I mean, state of the art, top flight. You spared no expense setting up your academy, man.
Yeah,
academy/gym.
Yeah, well, I knew my neck. You know, the time, the clock was ticking, and I was 40 at the time, I think, and I'm like, yeah, I better prepare something to transition me to the next thing, and luckily I did it when I did, because you know, I'm no longer with the WWE, but now it's self-sufficient. But if I had to, because for 1 year, you know, I had to donate one of my paychecks per month right to the company just to cover salaries and stuff like that. But it, you know, being an athlete, being a pro athlete, and I just created my own dream facility. But in doing that, you got to have pretty good, you have to have some confidence in that your taste is going to be well received by the masses. So, you know, what if you, and let's face it, there's some people out there that just don't have good ideas. So, yeah, but you have to stick to your guns. So like 100%. And you're going to have, everyone's going to have an opinion on what you should do and what should go where. But you really just got to, you're the only boss. You do it. And so I got, yeah, the MMA side. We have the Ontario Performance Center. We have the Don Koloff Arena in the middle. And, man, it was a lot of work. And it's probably seven businesses at once. You know, there's a whole Olympic wrestling team, a competitive judo team, boxing team. So that's the, but some people would open those just as a business on its own, like I own a boxing gym, and which is a lot of work in itself, because you have to do the maintenance and the marketing and dealing with people and, you know, talent relations.
Talent relations, like dealing with kids that punch holes in the walls because they have a shitty match and they can't deal with it.
Yeah.
I'll take the blame, but I didn't do it.
Today to an email from one of the parents who doesn't like one of our coaches, and okay, check this out. Olympic wrestling is a couple 12-year-olds, and they're practicing, they're going at it, they're getting hot. I mean, they're getting really rough, and they, you know, it's kind of like becoming a little bit of a fight. And our coach is an old school Iranian coach, and he's thinking, well, settling.
I can't believe it. Your coach is here from Tehran, Iran.
Yeah, our coach is awesome. He's actually a former Iranian national coach at one point, Baman Sarbazi. He trains these kids.
Exactly, Baba.
But his thing is, this is not ballet. These guys got to fight. These guys got to be tough. If they're not going to stand up for themselves in practice, they're going to stand up for themselves at a training camp or at a tournament. So it's okay to let them fight. You know, let them butt heads and get a black eye and cry a little bit. That's okay. Anyway, so that's what I woke up to this morning, just dealing with that. And that's one aspect. of course. And then there's so many, and then there's just the whole getting members to come in, marketing, advertising, social media as a goddamn part-time job just in itself.
Now, Alex, let me tell you something. I had the pleasure, you know, he'd be out to perform with one of his students. Actually, the whole thing was cool. I'll tell you the whole story.
Is this in the city that rhymes with fun?
This is a long way from Regina. A long way from Regina.
Yeah, this it's about 4 hours.
This is in Mississauguan. I got there. I'm blown away by this facility that he's got and his students, you know, really hardworking. And he says, okay, everybody get together. It's an afternoon. And the students that are on the show, he says, all right, you guys square off and grapple. But a shoot, not fucking working, a shoot. And whoever wins the shoot wins on the show. That's how we book it. So now you can't bitch about, oh, I don't want to put that guy over. Oh, yeah, well, that guy beat your ass. So look at me, you know. And, man, I thought, wow, that was so fucking awesome because, you know, if a guy comes with his ego, well, I don't want to put him over. Yeah, well, you put him over and you had no say in the matter. He beat you. So as far as, you know, everybody's pretty much on the same level in terms of just coming up, that's one way to fucking quell egos. And I thought, that's pretty damn cool, man. I kind of like that concept. What made you decide to do things that way?
I guess in conversations, you know, my buddy Little George, right? My buddy George.
Yeah, of course.
So he's a quite proficient fighter, and like, you know, MMA and stuff like that. And we were just when we were in Japan, you know, you always talk like, well, wouldn't it be good if this is the way it was? And yeah, so that's the way I would have liked it, you know, if there's a little bit like that. Or you always wonder when you're up and coming, does that play a toll a little bit in the decision making or whatever? So when I was in the position to make it how I want it, that's how I wanted it. And that's how I was telling somebody that too. Well, one thing about pro wrestling is that whoever's in charge of the show, whoever's risking the money and investing, it's just really they can do whatever they like. If they always wanted to see a screw job this way, they can do it. And right now I'm the one that gets to enjoy the creative aspect. So that was part of my creative aspect.
You know, I remember again when I was there that weekend, you had a very interesting situation with what was the Japanese kid who everybody was so fond of?
TK.
Oh, man, I love that guy. He was so cool. God. So Alex, TK, and this other young student, they're grappling.
This is the shoot grappling you were talking about.
Yeah, so at the end of the – when we had everybody score off who's going to wrestle, we just called out a couple kind of dream matches or whatever. This guy versus this guy. Oh! And then this guy versus this guy. Oh! Yeah, so TK is a 150-pound Japanese kid who came here to train with Mr. Ishikawa because he's friends with so his dad is friends with Ishikawa, and he's a very, you know, well-respected trainer. So TK just graduated massage therapy school, was taking a trip. He comes down, and he's training, like, really hard. He got in wicked shape, actually. But he's 150 pounds. And there's this kid named Aaron, who's about 6'4". He's probably 250 at the time, a little sloppy, but, you know.
Fleshy, doughy 250.
Yeah, and he's now since lost probably 40 pounds. It looks much better. But he's 240. So he was on top of TK, and TK was giving it 110% to get out from the bottom. He's arching and he's struggling, and Aaron's keeping his weight. So when TK finally, whatever, turns out, scoots out the back door, gets him in, I don't even know the name of it, man. But anyway, he puts an arm lock on him, but he's still stuck on 110%. So he just, pulls back the head and spiral fracture on the humerus.
Oh,
like,
shit.
Horrible. Horrible.
Like, and you heard elbows. The snap.
Oh, yeah. Two elbows, and he had two elbows.
Yeah. And I got to say this, as I told you in our conversation, the way you handled it was masterful. He goes over and he kind of straddles his arm and is leaned over so that he can't see his arm. And he tells him, hey, look, just relax, just breathe. You know, we EMS is on the way. They're going to take care of you. It's all good. Just relax, calm down. So don't look at your arm. He said, I got some good news for you. The good news is it's a clean break. There's no torn ligaments. So, you know, you just have a cast and you'll be out for a few weeks as opposed to having surgery and being out for months. So look at the bright side.
Yeah. That's quite a bright side there. But no, yeah. Just the approach you should take.
No, he still calm. And then the cool part was, you know, this kid had never done, had, as I understand it, never drank, never done any kind of drugs. It was like 100%. And then the EMS show up and they hit him up with some morphine. And a few minutes later, he's like, whoa, I've never felt this great in my life.
It's funny because years ago, my buddy Jamin, he had surgery and he was talking to the girl, the anesthesia girl. And she said her favorite part is to look at the eyes when the anesthesia kicks in and watch that just – the glassiness just go over it. And so Aaron's laying down, they come in and they give him the, the shot of morphine and he sits up and I swear I saw it. I'm like, ah, look at this guy just got high as a kite. And all of a sudden he looked around and he goes, yeah, okay. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, he was smiling and he's like, oh man, this feels great, man.
All right.
Yeah, it was a cool – and there was another really cool thing. Mike Durosti, was that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I met – Alex, this is so cool how, you know, life just takes its twists and turns. In New Orleans, this kid comes up to me at the table and, you know, he took a picture with the U.S. title and took a picture with me and got an autograph, did, you know, the whole deal. And he says, hey, I mean, I'm training to be a professional wrestler, man. You know, one day you're going to see me, man. Watch, you're going to see me. I'm like, oh, you know, that happens periodically.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
So, first things first, I need to take full responsibility for the change in sound quality. For whatever reason, my computer just decided it wanted to update in the middle of the podcast, and now that shit is like at 2% or whatever it is. It's going to be a while. And since all of our time is precious, I had to switch back to the iPad and the Bluetooth headset. So my apologies in advance for the deteriorated sound quality.
Was the computer a Windows computer?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that drives me ape shit. That's why I'm a Mac guy, because those auto updates, yeah, very bad.
Yeah, and I didn't even see an indicator to, like, postpone it or anything. Sorry. At any rate, my apologies. I believe I was talking about your guy, Mike Durosti, and how I met him at the WrestleCon in New Orleans. And, you know, he said, you know, I'm going to wrestle, and I'm, you know, I run into young guys. And I'm like, okay, cool, man. You know, one day, you know, stick with it, yada, yada. And not long after that, my good friend Santino says, hey, man, you know, I got my school up here. You know, we do shows. One of my, you know, we're doing a thing where, you know, the guy who sells the most tickets gets to be your tag team partner. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, that's a good deal. And apparently Mike was feverishly selling tickets and checking in with you every day to make sure he was in the lead, right?
Yeah.
And I went up there and we had a tag team match. And that night was actually really, really cool. It really – shit really came together in the best way because everybody's favorite bald-headed referee, Jimmy Corderas, he stopped in. And I love Jimmy. Jimmy and I have always been real close. And we like, yo, Jimmy, let's throw something in here where, you know, we create a ref bump and you're in the audience and, you know, implore you to put the shirt on. And man, what a great time because one of the guys that we were tagging with on the opposite side actually took a bad bump outside the ring and couldn't get back in the ring. He was hurt. Mike fucked his ankle up pretty good. I forgot what happened, but I saw when he landed and his ankle rolled. I'm like, ooh, man, he's hurt.
Yeah, and I think it broke.
Did it actually break?
Did get a small break, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But I remember like he toughed it out and was able to kind of half-ass finish. And on the fly, I forgot the guy's tag team partner and the referee, but it all came together. And the talent of both the referee and the guy who didn't get hurt on the opposing team, whose name I don't recall. I apologize.
Oh, the like, Jack Jack guy.
What was his name?
He was Billy Jack, black guy, right?
The black guy got hurt. His tag partner didn't get hurt. What was his
name? JP.
JP, okay. So, like, we're coming to the finish. This guy can't get back in the ring. And on the fly, I told the ref, I said, stay in the corner. And everybody just kind of knew I shot him into the corner like I didn't know. We did the ref bump. You know, I did whatever, and boom, there's no count, there's no count. And we got the audience involved, and we implored Jimmy to put on the shirt, and Santino gives him the shirt, and everybody's, come on, John. He puts the referee shirt on, and he comes in, and he counts one, two, three, and beautiful, happy ending. Everything was great. And this kid who came and told me, hey, man, one day I'm going to wrestle with you, was my tag team partner that night.
Yeah.
And everything came together beautifully, man.
I remember actually, so in the Don Koloff Arena, it's so funny when that happened, I didn't hear it, you know, much louder than that ever. You know what I mean? That was loud.
Oh, man, it came together perfectly, man, with Jimmy being there. And, like, it was just one of those emotional moments where, and the crowd, man, they were so into it. And you know, Jimmy, he did it perfectly, taking the time, like, should I? And you with the shirt, come on, Jimmy, come on. And the crowd they were, come on, Jimmy. Oh, man, it was beautiful. And it all came together great, man. And I got to say again, as I said before, your students are awesome. The way you train them and Toya Ishikawa and their attitudes. And I had a great time, man. You were a great host. I would come back to Mississauga, Mrs. Wagwan, anytime you need me, man.
Hey,
I'd just like to come up there and hang out. You don't even need me. Just
you can come up for we have all those festivals here in the summer, and there's so many. It's just Toronto for summertime is awesome, you know. Right now, the Euro Cup, and like my street, for example, I got Italian lady beside me, Macedonian, Bulgarian neighbors here, Portuguese across the street. My street is super multicultural. We have the one Asian family.
Dark like Macedonian.
That's a quick reference. I'll tell that one time. Kozlov, we went tanning, and he comes out, goes, look at me, I look like Macedonian. it's a pretty random reference, especially if you're a North American, but luckily I have lots of Macedonian friends.
Yeah, you know a bunch of Macedonians, so you got it. The average person you look like a prehistoric animal?
Yeah, well, it's a Macedon.
Yeah, well, you're big, but you ain't that big.
Yeah, the Euro Cup right now, so everybody, all these gas stations and, you know, they're selling these flags that go on the cars. So everyone's driving around with flags of their country on the car, and the local sports bars are packed, and it's pretty fun during the Euro Cup and the World Cup.
Yeah. Well, you know, our neighbors up in the Great White North. no, wait a minute. Hold on. I can't help myself. Every time I'm dealing with a Canadian or I refer to Canadians, I have to go,
nice, Bobby Doug McKenzie.
Hey, you hoser, take off.
It's just like the podcast with Edge and like that's universals in life.
I have to. If you're Canadian, I have to.
Yeah. Take off. Yeah, I used to watch that as a kid all the time.
Take off. It's a beauty way to go. That's my best Geddy Lee.
Well done.
I have a French bulldog with a Polish name, and I played an Italian character, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm Canadian. So today I sat my dog down and I said, buddy, today I'm going to introduce you to bacon. And I fried up about 8 pieces of bacon, and we just sat there, and he was very happy.
Wait a minute, time out. Bacon or Canadian bacon? Come on.
It was Canadian bacon. Yeah.
See, that shit ain't bacon, man. Come on, man.
Oh, no, not that female bacon. This is regular bacon, but Canadian smoked bacon. Not that stuff. The stuff you're talking about, I don't even know why they call that bacon. Nobody
here even eats that. See, I can't figure it out. Like, I haven't eaten meat in years and years and years. I'm a vegetarian. But when I ate meat, like, you'd order Canadian bacon. It's just little ham, right? Like, I
can't. That's all it is.
It's just small.
Yeah, but we don't eat that. That's one of those things we have a restaurant called Swiss Chalet. It has nothing to do with Switzerland. And the Canadian bacon, I don't know why they say that, because we don't eat that bacon.
You know, it's funny because I was in the UK and I was shopping. I was in the supermarket with a friend and we were picking up some stuff for breakfast. And I was kind of amused because their bacon is kind of like Canadian bacon. It's just ham. And I said, no, that's bacon. And my friend looked at me and said, "That's poor people's bacon." I'm like, "What is that? In England, that's what you call this? Like, this is poor people's bacon? Like, man, in the States, that's like the shit, you know?"
Yeah. Damn. This bacon I had was, damn, it was so good. It was so good, it actually made me happy.
See, Alex, you're missing out on meat, man. You got to get back to being an omnivore and eat some dead fucking flesh, man.
Dude, I'll make you my my Gardein Salisbury steak. You'll be fine. You'll be loving it. Or at the very least, I'll get you so stoned in advance that you'll think you love it. So it works out the same way.
Do you eat eggs or fish?
I eat eggs. I don't eat fish, though not for the same vegetarian reasons. Like fish, I've always had a very like. Not like I have to shoot myself up with epinephrine or anything, but I've had a very mild fish allergy. It's tough to describe. It's like you just feel a little allergic. So even when I ate meat, I was never a big fish eater.
I don't eat fish either, man, and for the same reason. Because if I eat it, I without question will throw up.
You were talking about that when you were talking about the sushi.
Oh, wow, man. I'm trying to eat more and more in my life. There's a city, and I believe it's the Amalfi Coast in Italy, that has 300 people over the age of 100. And they're analyzing and examining their diets and heavy sardine diet. So, of course, I went and bought some sardines that day. And fish, yeah, man, the oils and... I think fish is...
If I could eat fish without throwing up, if for no other reason, just for the health benefits, I would. I mean, I drastically cut back on my red meat consumption. Like, dude, I bullshit you not. I used to eat a steak every single day, sometimes twice a day. I'd eat a steak for lunch and a steak for dinner. And now I try to consume more chicken, more turkey, and fish just isn't on the menu for me because if I eat fish, I'll be giving it back to you in about 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, you know what I do when I go talk to kids and high school kids about, you know, nutrition, and I'll give them the straight goods, and I'm like, I know it sucks. You don't want to hear it. You know, you can't have Pop and you can't have Dorito. I mean, you can, but I mean, it's not good for you. Try and implement a cheat day, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I give them this rule of thumb. It's called 3-2-1-0. Try and have let's say you're going to have the one main protein meal a day. Try and have, fish three times, chicken two times, beef once, and try and just implement one vegetarian day. Just, get used to the idea that you don't need meat every single day. But I think you do need it in your diet just because of some of the protein strains.
Yeah, maybe we don't, but God damn it, I want it. God damn it, I want steak.
You know, it's funny, you know, first you can't smoke and you can't do this. And, you know, a lot of rights have been taken away over the years. But, and, you know, if you've been doing any research or if you're paying attention, the beef industry is pretty, its impact is pretty negative on the environment. And, but people are like, listen, don't even think of telling me I can't have meat. That's not going to happen ever.
Hey, dude, I love a dead cow. I love a dead cow. I have a very intimate relationship with dead cows.
I imagine all these, you know, animal spirits.
I don't know about your intimate relationship with dead cattle, but...
So imagine there's a lineup of spirits, you know, and they're going to spin the big wheel and see what they're going to get to come back to Earth as, you know. So you spin the wheel and it goes, you get to be a cow. You go, okay, well, why is the cow have a red mark beside it? It was, those are animals that are delicious to humans.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know what? If I'm a cow, I won't know any better. I'll just be chewing cud until they hit me in the head with a sledgehammer, and then it's all over. So, yeah. Hey, you know what? Real quick, I got to tell the story because it's kind of hysterical. So when I was in the WWE, and they enacted the wellness program. Initially, cannabis was something that wasn't tested for, and then they added it later. Yeah. And you know, after a few positives and being fined and, you know, getting in trouble over it, I was like, okay, we can't smoke anymore. And then one of my buddies turned me on to, you know, what everyone now refers to commonly as spice, which was that synthetic marijuana.
Oh, God.
And initially, before we knew how bad it was for you and how disgusting that shit is, because I won't touch it now. Like, I just rather would not smoke at all than smoke that. But at the time, I didn't know. And my buddy said, here, try this. And I tried it, and a few minutes later, I was like, oh, wow, I'm high. Okay. And the guy's like, yeah, you don't test positive for this. So I tried it, and sure enough, took a test, didn't test positive. And I was like, wow, okay, maybe we have a solution. So I introduced it to the boys, and I remember. It was you and me and two other individuals who I won't bring into it, but they're like, God, man, that shit doesn't work, really. And we rolled one up, we smoked it, and you were driving. And you said, yeah, I don't feel anything, man. I don't feel anything. And then a few minutes later, you were like, oh, shit, I shouldn't be driving.
Yeah. God, that stuff actually... Yeah, exactly like you said, you know, and the thing that the offices and the people don't understand, and if you have any kids or family and being on the road for so much, it's tough, right? So sometimes you want to shut down and smoke a joint, and that was great. Nobody goes gets in, you know, obviously we don't have to talk about the benefits, but then you can't take away our little buzz escape, but they did. And that stuff that came around, that spice stuff, was so bad. I actually had a horrible, horrible experience in Las Vegas one night with that, where, oh, man, there was this one batch that came out. So everybody jumped on the bandwagon. And all of a sudden, they're like, yeah, it got stronger every week exponentially as this scene just,
the,
you know.
Spice craze.
The spice craze blew up. And then everyone's adding whatever chemicals. Who knows what that shit is. And yeah, I was having a great time. All of us, and it's very rare that like all of us all go out together because there's different cats that do different things. But this night, there seemed to be a lot of us out in Vegas. We went to this club Aria, a couple booths, some bottles. It was actually, I took a moment, looked around. Well, this is awesome. This is good. Tonight's a good night. And then somebody passed me the little porcelain cigarette, one hitter gimmick. And I do it, and then I'm like, wait, what was that? And he showed me the bag, and it was called Relaxanol. Now, Relaxanol was one
Relaxanol,
that...
Relaxanol, Jesus.
It's, yeah, Relaxanol was
well
one
that well I names.
So as soon as I saw the brand, I go, oh, no, that stuff's horrible. And I've been drinking a little bit, and, you know, it's going to, you know, make it worse. And I told my tag partner, Kozlov, I'm like, buddy, keep an eye on me, man. I took a hit of that Relaxanol, and I'm a little nervous. And he's like, well, don't worry, I got you. And sure enough, a few minutes later,
that's how he said it too.
Yeah, I sit up and I'm like, whoa, oh shit, I'm gonna puke. And at this point, I'm like, messed up. I'm walking, I'm sure, like Frankenstein, complete Frankenstein, to the bathroom, and we have to get the car, and we gotta leave. It's done. This night's over, in one puff. And God, yeah, that shit was dangerous. Thank God that everyone kind of caught on to it. And I don't think anyone does that shit anymore.
Yeah, well, it's funny because a lot of places banned it, and, you know, rightfully so, because initially no one really knew how bad it was. And, you know, I was smoking it on the regular. And I remember at one point I would get these little, not heart palpitations, but I don't know how to describe it, but I just wasn't feeling right. And yeah. I said, all right, well, let me stop taking these fat burners. And I stopped taking the fat burners, and I would still, like, get the little weird sensation. And then I just cut that shit out, and it stopped completely. And I came to the conclusion, like, nah, man, that shit is garbage. I'm not fucking with that anymore. And I just left it alone completely. And I think most people have, too. And at first it seemed like, oh, this is great. You can still get high and not, you know, violate any rules or laws. And, you know, I remember initially... I had the little silver cigarette holder, and I had my little roller with filters, and I would roll them up like cigarettes, and I'd put them in my classy silver cigarette holder.
Yes,
so I'd slide it out of my suit pocket and open it. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
Open it up and Would you care for one? Be in the club smoking, and hey, man, we're legit. We're not doing anything illegal. Everything here is legitimate. You know, and then, you know, we realize, like, yo, this shit is garbage. It's killing you. You know, or garbage. I hope not, but, you know, all the bad, you know, and there were so many people that had bad episodes. I remember that Mr. Nice guy. That was the shit that... That was the shit that was like, whoa, okay, this is not good, man. Let's leave this shit alone. And I was done with it.
Well, one time, so I guess I smoked a little of that spice stuff with Kozlov, who doesn't normally actually smoke at all, actually. And so we're splitting a hotel room. So he's shaving in the bathroom. And I'm laying on my bed. And my vision, like my peripheral vision, became circular. And I was like, oh, shit. That's affecting like my optical nerve. I'm like, this is, it looks like I'm looking through a tube or tunnel. And I'm like, how is this guy shaving? How is this guy shaving? And all of a sudden he just walks by, doesn't say anything, walks to like past me and goes, strong shit.
Dude, I miss that guy so much, man. Like, he used to say the funniest shit all the time, but not at all trying to be funny.
Yeah, yeah.
He would have
one liner
like that.
I was down in Miami. Yeah, I was down in Miami a few weeks ago. Me and the wife went down just to get a little getaway. And, well, we were in Tampa, but I'm like, okay, he's worth the drive, you know. So we went down there, spent the day with him, and, God, what an amazing human being. You know, I was with the – when you're a tag team, you're with the person a lot. Like, we're, like, God, like 5 days a week for – you know, years. That's
you're with that person. You know, it's funny. You know, I learned the term a long time ago, road wife.
Yeah.
You know, you're with this person more than you're with your spouse, your family. And you know, when and in our case, especially with WWE, you know, I tell people my busiest year, I was on the road over 270 days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there were literally times when I had days where I would get home, drop off dirty clothes, pick up clean clothes, and then boom, be right back out. And you know, the average person probably can't really understand the, all right, I mean, you can kind of get an idea, but to actually experience the closeness that you develop, the kind of dysfunctional family that you know, we had or that exists in the WWE or, you know, in Japan, you know, even with their schedule. And you find all of a sudden that even within the family, little factions of the family, you know, just kids, you know, just people are kind of drawn together with similar interests and similar grooves. And I remember I brought my cousin on the road one time, and I walked in the room, the hotel room, and there were you and Spanky and, I don't want to say any more names, but just a group of guys with similar interests. And my cousin looks around and he goes, oh, you hang out with the bad kids.
Right?
Yeah. I remember before, so when the wellness policy, well, fuck it. Well, I'm not going to stooge you guys off, but anyway, who cares? It's fucking weed anyway. It's not even a bad thing. The wellness policy was in effect, but the weed was they didn't test for it. And God, you know what? We would sit around sometimes 10, 12 guys just shooting the shit and passing it back and forth. And I thought that it was great. It was great. And then it just came to an end.
Hey, well, I'll say this though, because I had this conversation the other day with somebody talking about, you know, the culture of professional wrestling and how pills permeated the culture to the point that, you know, all the way down to the indies, guys, you know, young up and coming guys just want to be cool and want to be accepted. And, hey, brother, I got pills. Hey, brother, give me some of those pills. You know, trying to emulate what they thought was cool. And say what you will about the wellness program, but in that particular regard, there's no more pills in the locker room. And even, you know, the trickle-down effect. Yeah, the trickle-down effect, you know, you go around in the indies now and you're, you know, you pass through locker rooms and it's not the same way it was where guys are trying to emulate what they think is going, you know, what's cool. That pill shit is kind of faded. I mean, yeah, it's in society at large, big pharma and pill pushing is still a big thing. But in our business where guys were dying on the regular from pills, You got to give credit to the wellness program for actually making guys accountable for their addictions and cleaning it up. And
100%.
You know, and creating an opportunity for, you know, if you are an addict, you can go back and say, hey, man, I need help. And, you know, they'll foot the bill. And one of the things, I mean, if we sat down, if the three of us sat down right now, we could quickly compile a list of 40 or 50 guys who died from pills over the years, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. So my back's messed up. My lower back's pretty bad. And actually, I called the office last week because I had an injection 6 months ago. And, like, they said it's going to last 6 months. And sure enough, like, 6 months and a day, like, the pain is back tenfold. It's debilitating. It's really bad. So I'm making an appointment to go back down to Buffalo because that's the closest American city where I can go and get treatment the next day. I can do it in Canada, but I'm going to wait a long time.
yeah.
And my back is – so I needed Percocets last week actually to – just a couple to make it through the day. My back was really messed up. And I'm so, like, cautious – and afraid. I'm like, well, I took two, man. I'm not taking any more. No way. I'm not gonna get hooked in this shit. I've seen what it does, and I'm scared of them, you know. But I did need them last week, but today I guess the inflammation's a bit better. I can
get my thing. There's a difference between needing them and wanting them. And
I do not want them.
I was explaining to someone, like, I have to be, like, injured and in severe pain to say, yeah, I'll take pain pills. Because I hate, I'd rather be punched in the face by Mike Tyson than be nauseous. Like, I hate nausea. I hate throwing up probably more than anything. And opiates always make me nauseous. So fortunately, that saved me from ever getting caught up in that because I just hate the way they make me feel.
Yeah.
And I think when I had my eye surgery for my detached retina, I think that's the last time I took any kind of pain pills. And I needed them. Because I was in such fucked up pain. And after that, I was like, okay, good, I'm done. And, you know.
Did you have internal pain, like, in your eye?
Yeah, my actual eye, my head. Oh, I had a detached retina, so they had to go in and do the surgery, and I had to be face down for a week and all that bullshit. And
come on.
Man, dude, I'm not even joking. Like, the procedure, they go in your eye, and they reattach the retina, and then they shoot a little air bubble in there so that it kind of, when you're face down, the air bubble floats up to the top of your eye to hold the retina in place until it actually heals and reattaches fully. So they have a company or companies that will rent you the equipment so that you have, like, you know, like the little massage chair where you're face down.
Yeah,
one of those. There's like a little angular mirror so that you can sit in that and watch TV. There's like a little thing that you can attach to the edge of your bed so that you can lay face down. So for a week, I had to, like, be face down. And, I mean, you can pick your head up periodically, but you can't stay that way. And you can actually see the little bubbles. Like, as the bubble would dissipate, you see these tiny little bubbles in your eye. It's the craziest thing. And initially, dude, that shit hurt. I can't even tell, like, the amazing headache, pain. It was brutal. And then, you know, it subsided and I was okay. But it was kind of my fault because I had, like, I noticed I had, like, a little blind spot in my eye. And initially I thought it was something with my contact lens. And I let some time go by. You know, we're idiots. We're tough guys. We never actually want to go see the doctor when we have an issue. I'll be fine. And
rub some dirt on it.
What's that?
Rub some dirt on it.
Rub some dirt on it. Take a fucking DDT.
Yeah, Robitussin.
Yeah, put some Robitussin on it. So, after a while, like, you know, I'm going to jujitsu, and, you know, it's Alex. If you take a circle, if you draw a circle, and then you take another circle, like, say a can, and you put it on, like, one third of the circle overlapping, that's kind of what it looked like.
Oof,
my vision.
Brutal.
And finally, I was like, all right, man, I need to go see the doctor about my eye because I just fucking, I only got like two-thirds of my vision. And I finally went to an optometrist, not even an ophthalmologist. And I had gone to her before because I had to go, like, to some emergency shit to get some contact lenses before I left for Japan. And she asked me, how long has your eye been like this? I said, about 2-3 weeks. And she goes, are you crazy? Like, why didn't you get it taken care of right away? I'm like, I thought it would be all right. You know, my contact lens,
She had somewhere to be.
Yeah, I had shit to do, man. I couldn't be worrying about my eye. And she goes, you are days away from losing vision in that eye completely. You need surgery now. I mean, she was all up in arms. She called an ophthalmologist, and they scheduled surgery right away. She's like, you need surgery today. And I think it was a Friday, and there was no way they could get me in, but they had me in that Monday. And the ophthalmologist was like, yeah, dude, don't – yeah, you were this close to, like, not having vision in that eye anymore. You don't ever do anything stupid like that again. And I was like, yeah, that was pretty dumb on my part.
And that is – you know what? I took a little bit of a – I have corticonis, and where my cornea is misshaped, and I have to wear hard lenses. So I had that, obviously, you know, since I was young. And they told me I shouldn't get any shots in the head, like any, you know. Anyway, I still became a pro wrestler. But I got away with it. I mean, I got a lot of shots in the head. But, I mean, there was a potential for my cornea to burst.
Sure. Yeah. And in my case, I remember the doctor said,
this is further evidence of my long-term theory that all of y'all motherfuckers are masochists. Deep in your souls, you're masochists. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. Yesterday,
I
took a broom handle yesterday and kept banging it off my shins just to, I don't know.
Just to feel the rush.
Feel something.
I need to feel. I can't feel. I'm incapable of feeling. All I can feel is pain, and it lets me know I'm still alive.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because the doctor was talking about, you know, I couldn't tell you how it happened. I don't remember specifically when it happened. I just remember one day feeling like, hey, man, my eye's a little weird. And I thought, like I said, I thought it was my contact lens. And the doctor said that he attributed it to my combat lifestyle. And I thought, yeah, I'm a big, tough alpha male, yeah. My combat lifestyle almost made me lose my vision. Check me out, I'm cool.
Yeah, I guess I have alpha. Combative lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah, a lifetime of fucking judo and then professional wrestling. Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, a lot of it's funny, you know. Like if you talk to 9-year-old Anthony and you say, hey, you know, you can do this, this, and this, but you are going to have a double cervical fusion at the age of 41, and you're going to have, you know, you're going to have no ligaments in your left ankle and separate both your shoulders and blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I still would have did it.
So what's the status of your neck right now?
It's pretty garbage. So basically, I had two discs taken out and they fused 3 vertebrae. But the condition of my neck warranted a triple fusion where they would have taken out 3 discs. But if they did that, then there would have been significant restrictions in movement. So for the chance of coming back, they did 2. And then, of course, we had the episode where 2 screws came out and they had to do an emergency hardware, or 2 screws loosened to the point where 1 was completely out. And if it turned around in my neck, I would have been really bad. If I punctured my esophagus, I would have been in the hospital for about 6 months eating out of tubes. And that's the same thing. When they saw the x-ray, they're like, you're coming to Pittsburgh tomorrow and you're having surgery tomorrow. And man, like the urgency when I showed up the next day was pretty crazy. It was kind of getting me nervous. I'm like, hey, because you guys are acting nervous, it's getting me nervous. But yeah, so basically, it was healing so slow that I thought it wasn't healing, and then something would happen where I'm like, oh, okay, that's better. A few weeks ago, I grappled for like I think 4 classes in a row, you know, and I even took some of the heavyweight guys to grapple a little bit, and my neck held out pretty good. My lower back shit the bed, but my neck held up.
You know, I tell people all the time, you know, you have those people who talk about, I mean, you had a lifetime of judo prior to pro wrestling. So you came into pro wrestling with, you know, torn ligaments and all kinds of like serious surgery type.
Yeah, I was protecting my neck on day one of pro wrestling because I already had an issue in university.
Protect your neck, little Wu-Tang reference. I see what you did there. but, you know, I tell people for a profession that is often referred to by the uninitiated as fake. I think it was Ken Shamrock, the legendary Ken Shamrock, who said he had more injuries in his pro wrestling career than he ever had in his MMA career. And we subject ourselves to some very, very serious punishment day in, day out for years at a time. And, you know, if you decide that you want to become a professional wrestler, that is the profession that you choose, then you accept the fact that you will never again in life know a day without pain. Every single day that you wake up, something's going to hurt, an elbow, a back, a knee, a shoulder. You will never know a life without pain again, and that's the trade-off. That's the sacrifice you make to be successful in the business.
Yeah, it's you're making that, well, not verbal, but that just that contract, and you're accepting everything that's going to happen. And yeah, there's good days and bad days, obviously, but I have to cut it badges of honor too.
Yeah. So let me ask you this: now that you are no longer with WWE in any official capacity, is there a chance that perhaps we could see Santino on the network in another capacity?
Yeah, and they were very clear about that this is just their wrestling contract. You know, they encouraged me to pitch ideas to the network, and I did. I pitched a couple. I know they're kind of finishing a season up, and they're starting new content later, so they have a couple ideas. You know, if I do something, I wouldn't mind doing something that didn't take up a lot of my time. Like, for example, let's say we're going to make 4 half-hour episodes. Well, let's try and bang it out on one day a month. I still have a tremendous amount of stuff to do around here, but, you know, that would be ideal. Even if I was doing something on one of the TV shows where I would, let's say it was just one show, I was only on SmackDown, you know, you'd fly out Monday, come back Wednesday. That's not bad, but that's still, like, you know, still 2 days.
This coming week. From a guy who spent, you know, 5 days a week on the road for 10 years or 8 years or however long. How quickly do you get adjusted to that non-WWE schedule?
It's funny because now, I have basically a never-ending to-do list with Battle Arts Academy. You know, I'll bang off as much as I can, and then there comes a time when I say, okay, the rest will continue tomorrow. And so for me to give up 2 days and come back to, like, a pile of things, I kind of got to be on it. So it really has to be worth it for me now to step away for a couple of days.
Well, I got to tell you, we've been friends for a long time.
Do you see yourself? I guess it's that question I ask everybody who's sort of stepped away from the day to day in ring. Do you miss that sort of level of performance and connection with the crowd? Do you imagine yourself, in addition to the work that you're doing with Battle Arts, going forward and working on something creative? Because you clearly have a strong creative streak. Like, do you miss the business, and do you see yourself being a part of the sort of big stage, WWE level creative, or are you more satisfied with the life that you're living now?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. Well, there's a lot of questions in that question. One,
right? Like, I to set up a lot of time for me to just sit back and drink.
Yeah. But, as far as wrestling fans go in the locker room, I'd probably consider myself one of the least, like, the fans. All I had in Canada while on TV was WWF, so I didn't really know a lot of the Florida stuff and the Tennessee stuff and the stuff and all these territories. And my actual knowledge of pro wrestling history was not very good at the time that I got signed. And being around the industry a lot, I learned a lot and met a lot of, you know, famous legends in the business and looked up and researched what they did and contributed. So I learned a lot, but I don't watch it. Lately, I'm not really a fan of the product that's out there around the world. There's just a lot, the style I like is a little different. You know, I like real...
That old UWF three-quarter shoot style.
Yeah, that organic start. I want to see, like, because we're doing a documentary here, and it's called The Restoration of Pro Wrestling, and to try and, because, you know, they said, okay, it's entertainment, but we still have the responsibility to try and make them suspend their disbelief.
Well, then here's a conversation we had with Josh Barnett.
Yeah, so why would you go, if that's the task you're giving me, then you got to give me some more time, and we got to go out there and we got to fight. Everybody, we got to grapple freely. When I see guys in my class lock up and grab a headlock and shoot them off and do a tackle right off the bat, I lose it. I'm like, what world of fighting is that ever going to happen, you know, ever? And the people that watch UFC and MMA in general, they're obviously a lot more savvy now. So we got to take our time. And when my athletes come to the ring, I go, come to the ring like you're a little nervous because you're about to get in a scrap, you know? And if you've ever been in a real fight and you're walking out to the schoolyard to get in a scrap, trust me, you're nervous, man. If you come in there like it's the fireworks going off and yeah, woo, like, come on, you're not coming to a fight. But those little things all add up to help me suspend my disbelief.
See, we had Josh Barnett on a few weeks ago, and you know, everybody was up in arms. Well, not everybody, but there was a little bit of controversy going on about the match that Ricochet and Will Ospreay had for New Japan, and I think it was the Best of the Super Juniors tournament. And you know, Vader made some comments about his take on it, and you know, Josh was pretty much saying what you're saying. But my take on it was this: like, everything evolves, and with the evolution of what professional wrestling has become, and now the popularity of MMA, like, the whole concept of 10 punches in the corner is ridiculous, because you get punched one time with a 4-ounce glove, your shit split, versus 10 times in the face with a clean bare knuckle. You know, if you punch me in the face 10 times with a bare fist, if I'm not unconscious and swollen like a pumpkin, then you're a pussy.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, my take is, when you go to the movies and you watch Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker beat up 50 triad gangsters in an alley, you don't go, oh, that's bullshit, that's fake. When you watch, you know, as I was talking to Josh, the legendary Bruce Lee and his fight scenes, he would do shit that you would never do in a real fight because it's cinematic. So in terms of professional wrestling versus MMA, like, okay, you watch MMA and that's what a real fight looks like. A real fight, no one's going to get whipped into the ropes, bounce back into a fucking waiting dropkick. It's not going to happen. In real life, you could never really superplex somebody. It just couldn't happen.
No, I tried a powerbomb in real life. It didn't work.
Well, I don't know. Ricardo Arona and Quentin Rampage Jackson.
I was just going to say the Jackson fight. But that's the exception that proves the rule. I think it's safe to say.
Well, I just saw a clip, and I retweeted it on Instagram, where some guy, and this shit tripped me out, it's a shoot MMA fight, and the one guy's on his back, and the other guy's up, and he's, you know, trying to find that space to pass his legs, and he takes a step, and he actually did a shoot standing fucking moonsault in an MMA cage on top of the guy, and it worked. Like, he got the position. And I put the caption, and I said, hey, Josh L. Barnett, you owe Will Ospreay and Ricochet a big apology. Because, hey, that shit works in a real fight if you can do it.
Yeah, well, I've seen backflips in Olympic wrestling matches and stuff. And it depends the genre you're in for. If I want to see some young guys that are creative, that are super acrobatic, get out there and do some awesome flowing into these moves. I saw a move last week. I watched it like 10 times. It was Cesaro and Zane do this up and over, spin around. When something is executed so well, I can appreciate that too. It's just for my favorite genre. And I guess what I'm associating it to is when I was a kid, you know, it was the good guy and he has to win this fight. he has to win this fight for all the good guys in the world, and that feeling you had as a kid. And if you know, if you want to recreate that, then we got some work to do.
Yeah, but is there a chance that we can ever get back to that? I mean, now with what professional wrestling has become and where we're at versus what it was, it used to be, and you know, professional wrestling was the original MMA.
Yeah,
and it's evolved to a point now where it is Hollywood and it's showmanship and it's dazzling moves, and it's gotten away from the original shoot-style grappling. And as I told Josh, with the popularity of MMA and people knowing what it looks like when you really get punched in the face and, you know, what a real fight looks like, can you ever get back to that point where people can, quote-unquote, suspend their disbelief? I think we're past that at this point. And I think that there are people who watch MMA and think, oh, fuck that fake wrestling shit. But there are also people who watch MMA and still love wrestling for what it is, because it's like going to a movie and watching Tony Jaa or Jet Li, you know, do amazing shit in a fight scene that you can't really happen. But it's entertaining and people want to see it. So I don't know. But on that note,
it's like music, too, you know. Everyone has different just different tastes, different.
Sure, sure. And don't get me wrong. Like I told Josh, and as you know, like, my favorite was always that shoot style as well. I like that realism. I like the fact that, hey, it looks like a real fight. But at the same time, you know, just everything evolves. But on that note,
you know, it's like, imagine taking a vote and saying, what does everybody want for lunch? And you're like, well, I want a steak sandwich. And everyone else wants bologna sandwiches. But that's the consensus. You're like, are you fucking kidding me? You guys want bologna sandwiches? Well, all right, then I guess we're having bologna sandwiches.
I guess we're having bologna sandwiches.
I think to extend that metaphor a little bit, I think the reality is that you're not going to get one guy wanting steak and one guy wanting bologna. You're going to get seven different people with seven different desires. And sometimes people who will like, you know, a little from column A and a little from column B. Like, I loved the Ricochet-Osprey match because I'm big fans of both.
Ricochet is awesome in general. That kid's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I think Ricochet is sort of one of your next generation Rock Austin level superstars. Like, that guy's got it all.
He needs to improve
his mic skills. That's the only dynamic, fucking spectacular to watch. And this isn't a knock, because I like Trevor a lot, and I think he's awesome. He's a cool person and a phenomenal in-ring entertainer. But if he could get his mic skills up to his in-ring skills, then yeah, he is that guy on that level.
Don't forget, though, remember Rock's early days, man. Like, Rock was not always great on the mic. Like, that was obviously great instinct and great charisma, but it was also something that built and that he learned over time. Those early days with Rock around that Survivor Series in 97, 98, whenever it was, he was not great, and he learned that skill, and I think Ricochet certainly has every tool to do that. And here, like, I always call this the wife test. My wife, who is only nominally a fan, like, she tolerates my obsession, my lifelong obsession with wrestling, right? Ricochet is one of those guys that my wife looks at and is like, oh, I want to watch this fucking guy. Because he's a great looking guy. And he's got, in addition to the charisma, he's got, like, whatever that X factor of charisma
is. That intangible it.
Yeah, he's got it. Yeah. And I think he can – I think it is absolutely – it is more likely than not that he can learn the skill of verbiage that you guys had and on top of the athletic skill that he has. It feels to me intuitively, as somebody who's not an athlete, that the athletic ability is tougher than the learned ability of taking what is a natural charisma and turning it into the ability to verbalize that.
Well, I wouldn't do that because he's only 27, 28.
Jesus
so
Christ, fuck all of these young guys. He and
he's still a baby,
all those guys.
Really? So,
I started training at 20 years.
Yeah, he's got lots of time to improve and get better and improve that aspect of his game. And that's the only part of his game that is lagging behind the rest. If he could bring up his promo skills to the rest, you know, like you said, he's good looking, he has in-ring presence, his phenomenal execution and his actual in-ring performance, I agree. There's time for him to get, like, you know, like I told Will Ospreay, dude, you're not even good yet. You're only 23, 24. Yeah. You're fucking phenomenal and you're not even good yet. You don't even really, you know. So on that note, dude, I want to thank you for coming and hanging out with us in the lounge and putting up with the technical difficulties. I apologize. But where can we find you? Put yourself over. Tell people, you know, where you're at, your social media presence, battle arts, whatever you got. Pimp your shit right now.
I guess, yeah. Well, Twitter is the big one. It's Milan Miracle, at Milan Miracle. Instagram is I use it a lot. It's The Milan Miracle. And that's really it. You know, we got battleartsacademy.ca, and Battle Arts has a Battle Arts MMA and all that kind of stuff. We're pretty active on social media and stuff, but I'm here, man. Mr. Saga. I actually got the license plate, Mr. Saga. And,
that's right. I saw it. Mr. Saga. Yes, you are the mayor of Mississauga, Mr. Saga.
Yeah. I'm actually, so Kozlov's actually doing a movie this summer, and so when we were sitting there, I'm like, well, I'm available, so he got me a little part in the movie. I actually went down and read. I read for Sportsnet, and we're working on some stuff there. Fight Network is based out of Toronto, so we're doing some stuff together, too. So it's pretty fun, man, being a free agent now. I actually called, and, you know, I like doing different accents and voices, so I was going to do some a meeting with some agents for voiceover work and stuff like that. I'm gonna just kind of see what's going on out there and try a little bit of everything.
Spectacular, dude. Greeny, what you got, man?
I am at Alex D. Greenfield on Twitter. I will, as you well know, I am getting ready to go and do a big call, so hopefully I'll have some good news next week. And I couldn't be happier. MVP, I feel like you've got to hit some fucking SoundCloud and freemusic.com and all of that stuff, because it's all on you, buddy.
Well, I am at the305MVP on Twitter, truly_MVP on Instagram, officially MVP on Facebook, and if you want to go to my SoundCloud, I do have a SoundCloud, but I use my Bandcamp. So it's 305MVP/Bandcamp.com. If you like the intro music and outro music, that's mine. And that is all I got right now. However, free shit, Alex.
We need to talk about some free shit.
It's all about that free shit.
Free 99.
Yeah, see, we got this thing where, you know, we have wonderful listeners who absolutely love us, and they send us
like
free
three
shit.
Of them.
like two or three guys, but they send us T-shirts and cock rings and the brass ring. Somebody actually
and
sent
from
us.
What I've heard, a really cool piece of key art from the thing.
Alex is right here, dude. As I said, I am looking at it right now, and I promise. You know what? When we finish,
when we get together in Orlando or Los Angeles, we'll get together.
No, just, you know what? All bullshit aside, text me your address, and I'll get it in the mail to you. Because as much as I like it sitting here, it is yours. It was sent for you, and at MetalNick1 has sent us some really cool vinyl because he's just a cool guy, CDs and such. But if you want to send me and Alex some free shit, whether it's a T-shirt, shotgun, whatever the hell you want to send, as long
whatever
as it's not
it is,
actually
and in fact,
shit.
I will interject only to throw out once again that at Cream Pie Chris got me tickets to NXT this year. So there's all kinds of good stuff coming. And don't you forget, MVP, before you take us home, to put over your Australian tour coming up.
House of Hardcore in Melbourne on the 24th. Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore is coming to Australia, Melbourne on the 24th, and then a bunch of us will be on in Perth the following day on the 25th, and then I plan to be in Sydney that following week. So hit me up, say hello, let's hang out and have a drink. And on that note, free shit. If you want to send us free shit, send it to P.O. Box 682724, Houston, Texas, 77268. Send it to MVP and Alex, carry the VIP lounge, or just free shit. P.O. Box 682724, Houston, Texas, 77268. And on that note, Alex, take us home.
Folks, the one thing I will throw out is you get a lot of content on MLW VIP. You get After Hours with the MVP and I. You get my podcast, The Writer's Room, where we dig into creative. You get podcasts from people who have thrown slaps. You get all kinds of stuff. And now Libsyn has finally stepped in line. And you can get it all on PayPal. It's a low, low price of $1.99, less than $2 a month. And you can listen to all of the MLW VIP shows. So I hope you'll do that.
Alex, see, that's why we need you. We need the intelligent Jew businessman to remind everybody. Yes, you can pay with PayPal now. You can get MLW VIP with PayPal. Shame on me for forgetting to plug that. That's why you are the intelligent Jew businessman.
You MVP good gimmick, man.
A to the Z.
Santino, thanks
Anthony,
so much.
Thanks for hanging out with us, man.
My pleasure,
thank
guys.
Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate it. This was super fun.
Let's do it again sometime. We'll talk some more nonsense. Well, not nonsense, but we'll talk about some nonsense.
We know nonsense.
We're always nonsensical.
Really well.
Yeah. Okay, guys, I have to go teach a class right now, judo class.
And we've all got to go and do stuff. So, ladies and gentlemen, have a great week.